Welcome to PACE. This is our November session. And as you can see on the slide on your screen, the supporters of PACE are Northumberland Hills Hospital, IMCARE, Northumberland Hills Hospital Foundation, the Ontario Health Team of Northumberland, the Community Health Centers, Northumberland Family Health Team, and the Loyalist College. PACE is essentially a collaborative effort. For those of you who are new and attending, and I do see a lot of familiar faces, but some new, PACE conversations are conversation starters. These are related to human health. We have no solicitation. This is not an advertisement for people to or an advertising platform. Topics are picked based on interest. What our audience tells us, what is their interest, and we also judge it by participation, you know. There's no personal advice given in these talks. These are not policy conversation of what the government or somebody should do. And most importantly, the speakers, the moderators, the organizers are not paid. So this is all a pure volunteer, zero-cost effort. Everybody is contributing their time. So folks from the hospital, we have Jennifer Gillard, we have Amy Seymour. These guys contribute their time and effort. And I'm not sure who else is there from the foundation. I did see Jen Gilmer, but that is the principle behind PACE. We've had speakers from all over, but not from so far, but we'll save that introduction for our moderator to do. Our moderator today is Dr. Anuja Sharma. She is an internist in Port Hope, Cobourg, or Northumberland, and she is the co-founder for IMCARE, and she has a special interest in longevity in addition to her practice, and we thought she would be our ideal candidate to be the moderator for that. So, Anuja, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Hi, good evening, everyone. It's a very special honor for me to introduce today's speaker who has a great deal of expertise, not only from his training as a pharmacist. You know, I think in many ways, pharmacists learn a lot about how medications and drugs work on our body in a more meaningful way than often we as doctors learn. So I'm really excited that Greg has used his training to cement his learning about aging and how to age in a way so that we can minimize disability as well as disease and the risk of dying. So to improve our functional lifespan, he has been doing work as a biotechnologist and a futurist, which I had to learn the meaning of futurist, which essentially stands for somebody who has intentionally built the capacity to understand the implication of change. So he's definitely a change maker. He has written a great book called Harnessing the 9 Hallmarks of Aging. So if any of you who's interested in learning more about this, I welcome you to read his book. It's available on Kindle, Amazon, and other places. I really enjoyed reading the book. I learned a lot. And he also has a company called Science Research Wellness, which focuses on measuring your biological age as well as how to improve it. So we're all excited to learn about aging and how to get older while living a functional and full life. So I'll transition over to Greg.
Thanks, Anuja. Look, it's absolutely brilliant to be here and share my a passion topic, really, about how we can all age better and that we can do it at any times of our lives. So with that, I've got a small presentation that I'll share with you. So if you just give me a second, I will share my screen. And hopefully that all comes up shortly. All right. So can everybody see that? Anuja, is that on screen?
Yes.
Magic. So, yeah, I'm from New Zealand. I'm a pharmacist, as Anuja says. I've been doing this now for a little over 30 years. But around a decade ago, I stepped into biotechnology. I'm a bit of a tech nerd, if you will, and I always get excited with new technology and breakthroughs. And biotech is just something which is really coming of age in terms of what we're learning and how it can impact on our bodies to help our health. So I was part of a company that was working on a particular compound which supports our mitochondrial function. And mitochondria are our little batteries that sit inside our cells. And just like cell phone batteries that degrade with age, over the time, our mitochondria degrade as well. And they're amazing batteries because they last us a lifetime. But from the age of 40, they start to decline. And that means there's less energy available for our cells, and that compromises our cells' cell function. And then more recently, I've started, this is probably 4 years ago, took a step back from just mitochondria and started looking at the whole cell. And it's a wee bit like if you took your car into a service station to get it serviced, and they only looked at the engine and they forgot about your brakes or your wiper blades or the tread on your tires. So really, when you're looking about how do we, help ourselves be healthier for longer, we need to look at it from a full 360 degree, full service perspective. And so certainly mitochondria are really important, but there are other elements of the cells too that that we need to focus on. So what we're going to talk about today is a longevity. We're going to talk about, the talk's 30 minutes and then we're going to do some Q&A. But I'm going to go into a brief history of longevity and just show you that we've actually become really good at it because we've achieved a bunch over the last 200 years. We're going to talk about something called the pace of aging. This is a number, and this number relates to a tiny little nanomolecular clock which actually sits on all of our cells and our DNA. It's really interesting because it actually informs us how well we're aging and also gives us some insight on what we can do to actually slow the effect of time on our cells. And then I'm going to talk briefly about what we can do with this information so that we can actually take the insights from what researchers are starting to understand and apply it to ourselves so that we can live healthier and hopefully longer as well. So there's quite a bit of excitement going on right now within the longevity community, and that is because it looks like we can modify aging. And this has meant that there are billions of dollars that are starting to go into solving aging. People like Jeff Bezos are spending billions. Google are spending hundreds of millions. Certain countries are dedicating billions of dollars a year in the quest to solve aging. And it's really interesting too, because these conferences that I get to go to, there are so many young people who have actually started to invest their time and their careers towards this as well. So why is it all happening now? Well, it's because aging is the biggest risk of disease. And that's a super obvious statement, right? Because we know everybody experiences more illnesses as we age. But the statement itself, aging is the biggest cause of the disease, is a really important statement because it frames things in a way that allows us to consider it differently. So, what if all these diseases and challenges with health that we associate with older age are actually just a syndrome associated with cellular aging? And if you think about all the money that's been spent researching the conditions like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and cancer and cardiovascular disease, et cetera, we've made incredible progress, but we haven't made the progress that we'd hoped in terms of being able to actually solve these conditions and actually cure them, if you will. So this stalled progress, the slower progress than we'd hoped, has actually driven a change in thinking. And researchers are now proposing that we look at slowing the syndrome of aging. And in the process, what we'll do is we'll actually slow the delay some of these diseases and extend the amount of time that we're healthy. And of course, the goal is to radically extend health span beyond what we experience now. But right now, the main focus is on how do we delay the onset of these conditions. And it's strongly believed if we can slow aging down, then we can actually delay many of these health conditions. Why is it really important? Well, it's really a small thing, and it's economic sustainability, because, you know, we've got a few small problems that we're dealing with right now, but this one is actually quite a significant one, and it's like a slow emergency, right? We've actually got to deal with it now, because if we don't, we're going to have a big problem later. We're really fortunate to be alive at a time where we're all living longer, but that's actually causing a few problems. We've got a graying population. By 2050, there's going to be 2 billion people on the planet over the age of 60. And that's all good, but currently half of people over the age of 60 have got one significant health condition. And of course, we all go on to get one or more. So if we continue to see this population increase up to 2 billion, it's going to mean that we're going to be having to support a billion people through significant health issues. And that's just not going to be affordable. This graph here is also, it's called the ratio of elder dependency. And it relates to China because it's a graph I used in a talk I did in Asia recently. But it affects every single country. And what it means is it's basically the amount of old folk that depend on younger folk to fund their care, because really this is what it's about. It's the younger folk who pay their taxes to support a population that is older. And if we look at the USA, and I'm sure these numbers are a little bit out of date, but the numbers I found were that 17% of GDP goes on health spend. And if by 2050, if nothing changes, it's going to be closer to 30%. And of course, this is before we adjust for the fact that it's going to be less young people around proportionally to fund it. So something's got to change. And this is really why there's a huge amount of focus on seeing whether we can solve this problem. And the good news is that it's really looking increasingly like we can solve this issue. And it's going to be a solution that's solved for a big problem, and it's going to arrive just in time. And when we solve this problem, not only are we going to dodge a really significant economic issue, but we're going to unleash a massive societal dividend that will have a significant and positive impact across all ages and stages of life. We're going to be able to live for healthier for longer. We're going to be productive for longer. We're going to have more time to develop wisdom that we can share to the younger generation. And really importantly, we're not going to be draining healthcare dollars until much, much later in life. The boffins, if you will, they've got their calculators out and worked out the economic value of just one extra year of health span extension. And it's significant. It's $38 trillion, right? So over a decade, this is $367 trillion. And what's exciting about this number is not just that it's a big number, but this is the average health span extension across the planet, right? So it's going to be really important that we don't actually, because you know, one of the criticisms is that people will say, it was only the rich are going to get advantage from this. But actually, there's a massive incentive to actually bring everybody along on this journey. And sure, there'll be some people that can probably access slightly, you know, longer health span extension, but really the focus is on how do we bring everybody on this journey. So let's sit back in time for a moment, because it's really useful to see where we've come from, to see where we're going and the potential of what we can do. For most of human history, our lifespan has been around 25 to 30 years. And it was a pretty tough old world back then that's almost incomprehensible to what we deal with today. You know, back then, you more than likely died during childbirth. If you survived that, then the next 5 years were incredibly perilous, and not many people survived the first early years of childbirth. And then if we got beyond that, then our chances of living longer went up, but we were dealing with also all sorts of existential threats around perhaps, you know, snow falling and making what you experience and making it really difficult to find food. Or, of course, there are lots of predators out there that were perhaps above us in terms of the apex predators that were all very hungry and looking for something to eat as well. So really challenging. But something quite remarkable started happening about 200 years ago. In an incredibly short amount of time in terms of our history, we essentially doubled and some our lifespan. It happened over 200 years. And how did we do it? Well, we started to understand the world around us and the world inside us. We learned about nutrition and hygiene. We discovered medicines. We got good at surgery. We got better at surviving through childhood. And many more of us arrived into adulthood and ultimately older adulthood. So we've been getting better and better at it. And it really is worth looking at this slide for a second. I'm sure many of you have seen it, but if you haven't, it's a description of what our population looked like back in the 1960s, and then a view of what people think it would look like in 2060. And so far, we're on track for this. Essentially, what it's telling us is that more and more people are surviving for much longer. And it's a really significant change because no other generations have really experienced it. And it's happening within three generations. 100 years is essentially three or four generations. And we're just incredibly fortunate that we're alive at a time when we're starting to experience it. But a little secret, I think actually that this is where we're headed. And it's not pyramid to pillar. It's actually pyramid to skyscraper. Because in the near future, those that want to take advantage of significant life extension are going to be able to access it. It's not going to be easy. And it's probably going to require a lifetime of hard work and training, if you will. But for those that want it and have the money to access it, they could potentially live for much, much longer. And of course, like everything, it'll probably go from skyscraper to sky tower, if you will, as we all start to access this technology and we get better and better at it. It's an incredibly exciting future because if we can live for a whole bunch longer, it's going to actually change significantly how we live and it's going to give us opportunity to spend more time but the people we love, more time doing the things that we love and mastering those things as well. So time will tell, of course, but it's looking increasingly like this is going to be possible. So back to feet on the ground, because that future is a little way, time away. But looking at where we're at now, the average human has a lifespan of 79, but a health span of 63. So this is health span is essentially the amount of time that we can, I guess, guarantee that we're going to be in good shape, or the average time. And then, we do have roughly 15 years where we start to decline. And, you know, we all experience that, as we age, and we get diseases and so on. So as we got better at longevity, we got this unexpected but escalated problem. You know, we basically traded more time for more age-related disease and ultimately a bad quality of life at the end of our life. So what we're looking to do, and a lot of what's driven this understanding about health span extension and life span extension is really driven off the base of how do we be healthier for longer? And there'll be the unexpected, or the expected nice side effect is that we live longer, but ultimately it's about, okay, how do we go from 63 to 83 and get two decades of vibrant, healthy life? We all know people that achieve that. We all know people that are in their 80s and 90s that have got huge energy and they are aging well, if you will. And it's unlocking that, you know, these people perhaps have a little, you know, good genes and good management, but how do we unlock that potential for all of us? Because it is absolutely available. For most of us. So where do we start if we want to extend health span and lifespan? The first thing we need to understand is our target. And the best analogy is another significant medical problem we solved a little over a century ago, and that was infectious disease. We couldn't solve infectious disease until we understood what the enemy was, if you will. What was the target? And it's microbes, right? And once we understood what our target was, the first thing we did was we implemented behavioral changes. And that was hygiene. We started washing our hands before we ate our meals. We stopped, example was in Victoria in England. Everybody used to tip their overnight ablutions out the window into the street below, which was just, you know, something which is, you know, we just don't It's just so foreign to do. We just wouldn't do that now, right? But surgeons started and doctors started to practice hygiene in terms of washing hands between patients and between women that were giving childbirth, and that had quite a radical effect on improving survivability of those surviving those practices, if you will. And then around 50 years later, we discovered antibiotics. And again, we would never have been able to discover those antibiotics if we didn't understand what we were fighting against. And so each of those steps radically changed survivability and ultimately meant that we had a human lifespan extended. So what's the target for aging? Well, it's the hallmarks of aging. In 2013, a really significant paper came out, and it was called The Hallmarks of Aging, and it was published in an experimental biology journal called Cell. It was called The Hallmarks of Aging, and really what it was looking at is what are the drivers of aging at a cellular level? And a lot of people think about aging as the external, you know, it's how what you look like, and people over the last, whatever, 50, 100 years have spent a fortune on defying age by helping their skin age better. But really what we've got to go is go deeper than that, because our skin aging is just an outward manifestation of what's happening on the inside. And really, if you want to age well, it's about actually what do we do from the inside out and what we apply, and applying that methodology to age better. So these are the nine drivers of cellular aging, and there are, I like to divide them into three areas. We look at our DNA. When I went through pharmacy school, our DNA was just what made us special and different and made us individual. But it turns out that DNA is actually the main driver of aging. And if you just have to look at the back of your hand and compare it with the inside of your wrist, and you'll see the difference in the quality of skin. And it's the same age skin. It's just that it's been the front of your hand, if you will, has seen more UV exposure. And that UV exposure is radiation, and that radiation has impacted on the functionality of our skin DNA. Then we go into the energetics. We talked about mitochondria before, which are our cellular batteries. If we have low energy in our cells, then that energy starts to compromise. A lack of energy starts to compromise our cell function. And if you think of, you know, a cell and its job, and let's say it's your heart cell, its job is to contract and beat and so on. But it's got other roles as well. It needs, things break in our cells just like they do in our car and in factories and in the house that we live in. And so there needs to be regular maintenance done. And if that requires energy, and then you've got to take the rubbish out, and get rid of waste and so on. So what happens is when we've got a decline in energy is our cell needs to make a decision. Does it continue beating, or does it take the rubbish out, and does it do the maintenance? And more often than not, the main thing is the heart beating. And so it starts to put the rubbish in the corner of the cell, and if something breaks, it just kind of ignores it because it can carry on. But over time, that compromises the cell. And so if we can improve that, improve the energetics of the cell, then all of a sudden we can start to clear out the rubbish and do the maintenance we need. So that becomes quite important. We don't need to worry about that until our 40s and 50s, but that's when our mitochondria start to decline. And they decline in function about 10% a decade. So, perhaps by the time you get to 100, your mitochondria are delivering half the amount of energy that you used to have when you're in a more youthful stage of your life. And it's incredible that the redundancy that allows us to function like that. But if we can keep our mitochondria going for longer, it's better. And then there's the housekeeping. And this is things like, you may have heard of zombie cells. These are cells in our bodies that start to build up as we age. And the scientific term is senescent cells. And these cells are really interesting because we all have them. We get more and more of them in our 50s and beyond, but we have them when we're younger as well. And there's a reason that we have them. They're important. But what an example is, if you cut your hand, your scar tissue starts to form, and the cells that build the scar tissue, if they kept delivering that scar tissue, you would have over scarification. So there are mechanisms which your body says to that cell, okay, we've done with you, We don't need any more scar tissue. And so that cell goes into almost like a hibernation, it stops functioning and goes into hibernation, and the body doesn't need that cell anymore. And so there's a mechanism where that cell starts to produce molecules that cause inflammation, and that inflammation is a signal to the immune system to go and remove that cell. But when our 50s and beyond, two things happen. One is we've got more and more of these senescent cells happening because a lot of cells are reaching the end of their life. And they're all starting to produce all this inflammatory information because they're waving over to the immune system to say, hey, come and get me and remove me. But our immune system at the same time gets a little fatigued. And so what happens is that we get a buildup of these cells, and it results in more and more inflammation as we age, and that starts to impact on our body and our cells. So we get less good, if you will, at dealing with that inflammation and removing those cells, and it has an impact on our health. So in terms of the hallmarks of aging, how they identified them was that they had three things in common. You have more of these hallmarks as we age. And in the lab, if you make them worse, then it accelerates aging. And if you make them better, then it slows the aging process down. And in 2023, this year, a decade after this paper came out, they basically said, well, look, aging is more complex than we thought. And so they added another three hallmarks. And this is going to change because this is all new science. And it could be that actually there's a master switch, which means that we may actually go back to just one hallmark of aging, or it could be that it's actually more complex than this. So all new science, and this is really where tens of billions of dollars of research is going into how do we slow it down and find out exactly what is driving the aging process. So the hallmarks are important and significant, not only because they outline the areas that are driving aging, but also because they're targets that research can look at to focus on how we can slow the aging process down. And just like the parallel of understanding that microbes were the cause of infectious disease and how we changed our behaviors, improve hygiene, and then we develop drugs to cure that. Now that we understand the targets of aging, then we can change our behavior to improve the hygiene, if you will, and then the drugs are going to follow. And we've had our, I like to call it our 4-minute mile moment. You know, no one could run faster than 4-minute mile until someone did. And then our belief systems changed, and then a whole bunch of people started to do it. We've actually realized that we can slow aging down around a decade ago in terms of the first molecule that could slow it down. And since then, there's been over 100 drugs and molecules that have been identified to modulate the hallmarks of aging. And if you talk to some people, they'll actually say it's more closer to 1,000. So this is really an exciting time, because what it's going to mean is that we'll start to develop therapeutics that are going to slow the process down. So I want to just divert a little bit, because one of the challenges in understanding whether a drug is going to modulate aging is that you'd possibly have to do a clinical trial, which was set up to last a century, right, to truly understand whether it affects it. So we had to have another step change in understanding of our biology to really understand how these drugs work and whether they work or not. So enter something called aging clocks, and these are really interesting DNA-based clocks. And, you know, we did something called the Human Genome Project two decades ago. And this was an incredible multi-country, tens of thousands of people, multi-billion project to understand what our genome does it was an amazing project. We learned so much about it. But at the end of it, a lot of people were quite disappointed because they thought that this was going to actually inform us on how we solve all sorts of diseases. And it was an incredible project, incredible step in understanding, but ultimately the actionable health information gained from it left people a little disappointed. And the reason for that is that our genetic composition is just one piece of the puzzle. And it turns out that our genetics are actually responsible for about 20% of how well we age. And the balance is actually to do with how we age is about how we think about aging, our environment, what we eat. All of these things actually layer in because it's actually the response of our genes to our environment, which actually turns genes off and on. And this insight led to the development of aging clocks. Okay, so we got an advance around, I guess with every advance in understanding is built on the layer below it. So we wouldn't have got to these aging clocks if we didn't understand the human genome and so on. But what researchers found around a decade ago is that we literally have a clock that ticks away that's written into our DNA. It's called DNA methylation. And really what it is that we have these little chemical groups called methyl groups that actually form patterns on our DNA, and they change as we age. And it's thought that just like we reach puberty or when we go through menopause and there are different ages and stages that we have, these methylation clocks are actually driving these changes. And when they discovered that, it was quite amazing. But what it meant was we have two ages. We have a chronological age. This is something that we celebrate every year on the anniversary of our birth. But we also have a cellular clock. And actually, the cellular clock is more important because what it tells us is the age our cells are acting. And I'm turning 54 in a couple of weeks, chronologically, but I can have a biological age that could be anything from 20 years older to 20 years younger. And this is really, really important because if I've got a biological age or cellular age that's 20 years older, it means that I'm going to encounter the diseases of old age much sooner than someone who's got a younger cellular clock. So super important because it's really what we want to be doing is be celebrating our cellular age and be focusing on that, because if we can keep our cellular age as low as possible, then that's really which is super important. So this is a really important discovery and really interesting, because if we've got two ages and we've got a biological age clock, it suggests potentially that we have because there are many theories of aging, and it perhaps brings to the fore that maybe aging is programmed. And when I say programmed, it just means that we have a clock that ticks away. We can modify that clock, but we may be able to slow that clock down, which means that we can extend our health span. It's to me really interesting, right? Because if we think about mammalian evolution and we go right back to when humans were just a twinkle in the very, very distant future, that it turns out that there was an evolutionary advantage to have a population that had the closest way to describe it perhaps is a proto mammal, or a mouse is a great way of example, a great example. But these animals had a rapid reproductive cycle. They produced offspring which had mild mutations, which created changes, which meant that those animals were better adapted to the environment because the environment was changing a whole bunch at the same time. So it favored those populations with a short lifespan because they could adapt quickly to the changes that were happening around. And it also meant that, that older animals would pass away. And that meant that there were less competition for the resources that may have been quite, hard to get at. And it just meant the younger animal, it supported younger animals. So super good news for the early mammals, and good news for ancestors, because it set us up on the evolutionary path that got us to where we are today. But it's not so good for us now, because we've got those ancient biological programs, but they're cutting into our time on the planet. So the good news is all this insight means that it's really possible that we can find a way to modify that program, and that means that we could lead to significant lifespan extension. And I'll go into this a little bit more later. And it's quite complex, but it's really served us up until now, and now we need to work out how do we decouple from that program, and that's really where the opportunity lies. So what's really interesting through the development of these clocks is that we can see that they respond really quickly to changes in lifestyle, perhaps taking some supplements and maybe certain medicines. And it means that no matter what our health challenge is, whatever age we are, we've all got the opportunity to age better at any time. And, you know, I'm sure you've been to talk to your doctor and they've told you things that are going to be good for your health, right? So these things that doctors have been telling us forever, essentially, that are good for our health, do have an impact positively on these clocks. So a good diet, exercise, good sleep, being mindful and managing our stress, being social, they all play out on these clocks and deliver us a lower cellular age. And conversely, a lifestyle of poor diet, low exercise, maybe the rock and roll lifestyle, if you will, has the opposite effect and actually speeds up how well we're aging. So these DNA clocks are a really significant breakthrough for two main reasons. There's many, but the two main ones are that we can actually identify whether an intervention like a lifestyle change or a supplement or a medicine, we can measure whether it has a beneficial impact on our health in a short period of time. So that means instead of actually looking at an intervention and doing a clinical trial over decades or a century, we can actually find out really quickly what's working and what's not. And the other thing too is that from a personal perspective, we can each go in and do these aging clock tests and we can see how well we are traveling through time, if you will, right? So how well we're aging. And just like we might go in to get a blood test to see how our blood sugar is looking, so from a context of whether we've got diabetes issues or just not managing our blood sugar as well, these aging clocks are actually going to give us the opportunity to see exactly how well we're doing. And that insight is going to mean that we can understand how we're aging at any age, and we can start, if we're not doing it well, we've got time to actually change something in our life so that we can get ourselves back on track. And it's just much better to know in your 50s that you're aging well or not, rather than being surprised when you have a health issue at 55 because you weren't aware that you're actually were tracking to it biologically at or cellular age of 75. So all good stuff to know, and what you can measure, you can manage and get ahead of. So certainly these insights just give us so much more insight, and it's going to mean that your doctors are going to be able to help you to do the things that work and do it earlier rather than later. And that could mean the difference of decades of healthy life. It's kind of funny you guys are doing the PACE talks, because this is the name of a particular aging clock, and it's called the Dunedin Pace of Aging. This is a really interesting number because it gives us a way, when you do your test, you can get a number from 0.6 to 1.4. One is the average aging, average ager. If you get a number over one, then you are a fast ager. And if you get a number below one, you're a slow ager. And if you get a number under one, it's really important, because if you're under one, you've got half the chance of getting a serious disease or health issue in the next 7 years, right? So someone who, compared to someone who sits above one. And so getting that number below that is about doing exercise, good food, good diet, all these things. Again, it's a really responsive number as well. So say you've lived a rock and roll lifestyle and your biological age is a little higher than it should be. This gives you a number which tells you how well you're doing right now. And so you can live that rock and roll lifestyle and then make lifestyle changes, get it below one, and it just means that you're going to be slowing your aging down. And the number one is actually, if you get a score of one, that means you're biologically aging at 1 year per year. But for people who are doing really well, they can get 0.6, which essentially means they're slowing their aging process down by almost a half. And people have and do regularly achieve this number. So it's achievable. So what it means is that we can slow down the aging process. It means we delay the encountering the diseases of old age. It might mean that we slow the progress in terms of aging joints, aging skin. We'll slow down our hearing decline and our vision decline. So all really important things that we can do. And it makes you look younger as well. So, you know, everybody used to focus on putting your, you know, cosmetics on your skin. But actually, if you start working at a cellular level for your whole body, then that can actually reflect on how young you look as well. And so, you know, these things will result in these good choices, and good health will be seen in your face. And we all look at people who look younger than they are, or older, and we can now measure that. And if we can measure it early enough, then you've got the opportunity to look younger for much, much longer. And a much better strategy, I think, because, you know, better than cosmetics, because you're actually doing this for your whole body, not just your skin. And researchers are getting even better than this. And you can now not only get your biological age, but your tissue age. So that means that I can have a conversation with you around what's really causing problems within your body. And like, I have Crohn's disease, so that means I'm aging faster from an inflammation perspective in my gut. But some people have heart issues and other people have brain issues. But you know, these clocks may tell us what's going on before we even develop these conditions. And that's really exciting from your doctor's perspective, because you can go in to get your test and you can say, Greg, look, you know, you're doing really well from a biological age, but your gut age is 10 years older. Don't panic, because, you know, that's okay. Probably in about 20 years, you're probably going to perhaps get a health issue that relates to your gut. But let's get on top of this now, and let's see if we can actually avoid this problem happening altogether. So this level of information is going to create an age where we're going to be in our 30s, checking out what's going well and what's not, and getting on top of it. And it's going to mean that doctors are going to be able to help us have preventative medicine and preventative wellness. And so rather than get Crohn's at the age of 40, perhaps I would have this problem or not decades later. So, yeah, really exciting, the level of information that this is giving us. So now I just want to talk about what we've learned, because this new technology means that we can start to understand what we can do to actually change our health trajectories. So from these clocks, we've validated all the things that your doctors have been telling you around interventions that can extend your health span. So what we know is that you need to do exercise for at least 30 minutes a day, build movement into your life, stand, don't sit, go do walking meetings, get out there and get, you know, perhaps walk up hills and get puffed, maybe go for a run, whatever you do, you know, whatever works for you in terms of what you can achieve. Do a little bit more of it, and perhaps take the stairs, walk to the dairy, walk to the letterbox more often, whatever it is. Just build movement into your life. And if you can, do some resistance training as well. From a food perspective, it's the Mediterranean diet appears to be the best out of all of the diets that are out there. We're still learning about the effects of occasional fasting and calorie restriction. But what we know is with calorie restriction, if you can eat 20% less a day, which might mean that you perhaps skip breakfast, something along those lines, that it appears that it has health benefits. There are really fascinating books out there. There was one by a guy called Walter Longo. It's like Walter with a V. He's done incredible work in understanding the benefits of calorie restriction. He has a particular protocol that people with cancer can take in conjunction with chemotherapy, which in breast cancer models doubled the survival rate. So really significant and interesting data. And also really clear that we just have too much sugar in our world these days. And if we can consciously start to edit sugar and hidden sugar out of our diet, and less carbohydrates, and that's complex sugars, and that's just bread and things like that. If we can be careful and be mindful about the level of that type of thing, those things in our diet, that it's very helpful for us. We're learning that sleep was super important. Back in my day at university, it was, I'll sleep when I'm dead. I just want to get out there and just go. Well, it turns out if you don't sleep, you do get dead. And so really important to prioritize that. And if you're not good at it and it's an issue, definitely talk to your doctor about how you can proactively seek out a solution, because it does shorten your life. We're learning that stress, but it's not just stress, it's actually how you deal with your stress. If you've got a twin and you both have the same stress levels, one of you mindfulness and learns how to like manage that stress better, then you can measure it on your DNA. So it's really important to work out strategies. And, you know, some people can meditate, some people active relax, some people go out for a walk. whatever you can do, just spending a bit of time working out how you manage your stress actually has a really important impact on how well you age and how healthy you are. And then we've learnt over being COVID the impact of not being social on our lives. So it's really important to be social. We're social animals. And if you have a significant other, or give them a hug, or you've got a pet, give them a pat, whatever it is, or even, you know, if you've got a club that you go to, or you have a faith or a purpose, each of those are quite important. But, you know, if you do have a significant other in your life, give them a hug, because they could result in an extra 5 to 7 years of your life. And that's, of course, if you get on well. But, social people in your life are really important. So what are we still learning? Well, firstly, you've got to focus on the habits, that fight, that base layer of lifestyle, because and that'll give you an extra 10 years on average, but you can't out-supplement a poor lifestyle. So really important to get it right. But there are medicines here that on the left, rapamycin, carbos, various drugs that have been shown now to extend human lifespan and animals. And what's happening is right now there are clinical trials to see whether this translates into humans. But I suspect strongly that it will, because these are all working on areas of our lives that affect our health. And what's really interesting is three of the molecules in the medicine line all help us manage sugar better. So it's a really strong clue that the more that we can edit sugar out of our lives, the better. We are ancient humans in modern times, and our Western diet particularly is not serving us in terms of suiting our biology. I think ancient humans used to have something like 1 teaspoon of sugar a week or something like that, processed sugar, of course. So we all have too much sugar in our lives, and it is negative, has a negative effect on us. And there are supplements as well, which are showing interest, which I won't go through, but these slides will be available, and just go and do the research, because they're super interesting in terms of how they affect the 9 hallmarks of aging. And then lastly, we're learning more and more about nature and about how to extend our lifespan. And, you know, we've got a paradigm where, you know, we expect to live to 80 or 90 or 100. But there are some animals that are actually live significantly longer than we do. The bowhead whale is a mammal just like us, and it lives healthy for 200 years. So if we just look at that particular animal and we go, okay, here's a paradigm shift where, for whatever reason, it's learned to live longer. And so if we can learn from that, and we take those learnings and translate them to us, then, you know, there may be some really simple things that we can do to extend life. Each of these animals are remarkable in their outlier life. And there is something called the Greenland shark, which is not here, but it lives for 500 years, right? So when we look at that and that paradigm, there's no reason to say that we solve problems, we can actually live significantly longer. And then, of course, there are all sorts of really interesting therapies that are starting to happen around reprogramming ourselves, so that biological clock that we talked about, you know, we might go in and get a car wash, if you will, a clean, and reset that clock from 50 to 40 or 40 to 30 and do that every decade. And theoretically, because when we reprogram it, our cells start acting differently and younger. So why not just go and get reprogrammed every 10 years? And believe it or not, there are researchers out there that are finding molecules that are starting to do that. So, again, these things may be a little further away than just doing the exercise and taking some of these medicines that are coming online. But, you know, do the exercise, make the medicines when they come online. That'll give us 20 years. And then the researchers are going to have 20 more years to actually start to understand what interventions are working and how we can live a whole bunch longer. So in summary, we've talked about the fact that we are doing really well. Most people think I'm crazy when I say that they can live a little longer. But actually, 200 years ago, we've radically changed our lifespan in a way that's incomprehensible for humans that have, you know, that over the last 70,000 years, they just couldn't understand what we've achieved. This next paradigm change is going to happen again. And it's you know, future humans 200 years from now are going to look at what we do and think we're almost like in the dark ages. So it's coming, and hopefully we can get the benefit of it, because then these advances are coming quickly. But at least the people that are born on there, you know, people that are being born now that will live substantially longer than we are right now. And we've learned that we've got tiny molecular clocks on our DNA, and we'll be able to translate that learning into advances to extend health span. And we've learned through those clocks that all those things that we've been told that are good for us actually are, and will extend our health span. And then, of course, that the advances that we're seeing today and the research are going to translate into humans that are going to have extraordinary long health spans, which is an incredibly exciting prospect, and it's going to change what it means to be human, just as the last 200 years have done for us living today. So that is it, and thank you. All right, I'm just looking at how I can unshare this. Here we go.
As you do that, I would like to thank you for that excellent presentation that you took us through the journey of our lifespan from the time when we were dying as, you know, newborns and kids to now in the past 200 years, now living for, you know, so much longer. And I read somewhere, probably in your book, that the people older than, was it 90 or 100, that's the fastest rising population in the world. And in fact, the skyscraper and the pyramid analogy was really impressive in terms of what, you know, humanity can look forward to if they were interested. And I was really surprised to learn that genetics only determine 20% of our of how we age. Is that something that has come about from the genome study? Or I'll just ask you that question before we move forward and ask a few questions from the audience.
Yeah, it's definitely come from the Human Genome Project. I mean, we just thought everything was in our genes in terms of our lives were preordained, if you will. But no, absolutely, we can shift our healthy aging trajectory just through lifestyle interventions and even down to, like I talked about, just managing our stress levels. So, and you know, back at pharmacy school, we used to know that people could slow their aging through, would be healthier through meditation. And it was really hard for me to understand that. But it turns out, absolutely, how we think can have an impact on how we age. And even how positively we approach aging has a positive impact on how we age.
That's, I think that's heartwarming, because I often wonder about social connection and even the virtue or value or importance of gratitude in everyday life in terms of how it resets our stress levels. And it's been studied for cortisol levels, but it's really exciting to know that it's a solid intervention for us to be more social. And I think you've given us steps to take to improve our living day to day with in terms of physical health, mental health, social, and to improve the financial health of the world. We do, it's kind of important for us to take care of ourselves so we're not, you know, we try and reduce the risk of becoming a financial burden on the society. So I think dividing the perspective of the aging process into our DNA and energetics and the and how you put it as putting the rubbish out was really a simple and easy way to like think of those things and focusing on our nutrition with Mediterranean diet and intermittent fasting, as well as exercise on a regular basis to help improve our genetics and methylation, which I think is great. And I feel very, very excited to hopefully live this life as we all get older with collecting more wisdom rather than maladies, as you wrote in your book. I thought that was a really endearing quote you put in there. So let me put forth a question that was posed by Jennifer Darrell to you. There was concern that she raises about insurance companies requiring Dunedin pace testing for us. Is that something you see in the near future, or is that some remote possibility in the future?
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. I think that it could be that if you're a good ager, that you're going to get a discount. So there'll be benefits for you if you are in terms of less cost. And there'll be people that don't want to do that, and that's fine because they'll just stick to the regular insurance model. There's an opportunity to, I guess, like the Tesla insurance, they work out whether you're a fast driver or a reckless driver or not, and adjust their premiums accordingly to how you drive. So there's an opportunity that you can opt into that. And if you're aging well, yeah, you get a discount.
Interesting. So something to look forward to in terms of people who take better care of. I feel like I read or heard somebody say that there'll be two types of human species as we age. One that does all the things you suggested in terms of exercise, sleep, contribution, connection, and avoidance of toxins, and the other that, you know, doesn't. And so it'll be interesting how things will be different for us. And I guess as a futurist, you'll be watching out for it. Thank you for that response. Let me see. Is Mukesh, do you have a question? I see your hand is raised.
Yes, I do. Thank you. That was great. So, Greg, you mentioned that there are certain drugs which are currently in use, aspirin, metformin, SGLT2 inhibitors, that lower this or slow aging. What is the comparison between somebody who says, okay, what is the relative value of exercise, mindfulness, and social networking versus these drugs? Is it 1 to 10? Is it 1 to 1? What does science say, or what do the biologic clocks say?
So right now, the best you can do, best medicine, if you will, is exercise. Like, that is ultimately just switching on all of the hallmarks of aging. And we just look back, 100, 200, 300 years ago, what we were doing all day was we were moving, we were looking for food. Our biology is just designed for us to move. And so that plus the diets that we had back then as well, when there was food, of course, and of course we went hungry as well. All these things, they kick off pathways in our cells that just are designed for optimal biology. So I think number one, got to get that right. Who knows on terms of the drugs and the medications coming forward, because what we know is that when we put our minds to it as a species, that we can do things which may be significantly better than nature. So maybe there is a pill that helps us, our body, think that it's exercising, which will augment what we do with our exercise. So the answer is, so the other thing is rapamycin, which is at the top of the list, is a compound which reacts with a part of our cell that is sensing whether we're eating food or not. And so the number one absolute 100% intervention that we can do to slow aging is calorie restriction. And that's logical, right? Because if we were, back in the day, again, the mouse that's foraging for food and there's no food, then the body's got to put longevity circuits into play so that it survives till it finds that food. And so there's a lot of longevity pathways and that are switched on inside our cells. And it turns out rapamycin is a calorie restriction mimetic. It makes the body think that it's not eating. So rapamycin could potentially add 5-10% to our health span or lifespan. And that'll be equivalent of doing all those lifespan, the lifestyle things that we do. And of course, if we do a little bit of rapamycin and we do a few other things which interact in different longevity pathways, we might incrementally get the opportunity to expend another 10, 15, 20%.
Thank you.
Nice. Greg, I think it's interesting to take it to the other end of what you said about calorie restriction. If we keep restricting our calories by 20%, it's only tenable for so long. And so I think these drugs might give us some an alternative to consistent calorie restriction. So
it's important from a quality of life perspective as well, because you do see people who are particularly good at calorie restriction, but I'm not sure, you know, food is such a part of life, and so, you know, denying yourself that means you're going to have an extra 10 unhappy years, which is, what's the point of that?
I want to have my cake and eat it too. Yes. I wanted to ask you a question that was raised by Bill Prowecki about these aging clocks. And I actually had an experience like this where while attending the conference, when I just took part in a test that they were doing for aging and found out that I was 20 years older than my biological age. So Bill is asking the question, like, how do you deal with what's the psychological impact of finding out your score is being like you're twice the age? And I know that I was questioning myself, because everybody who I talked to would say that, you know, you don't look a whole lot older, but people are generally kind too. So so you have any thoughts on how one might deal with that?
It's such a good question, because, you know, what's better to know or not to know? And personally, I think it's better to know and get your number. And even if it's a bad number, it gives you the opportunity to correct it. So I think I would rather know at 54 that I'm not tracking well, so I've got an opportunity to deal with it. Because, you know, being on this planet, it's challenging at times, but it's also, there's so much joy and benefit around it. And you're part of a, you know, part of a community and so on. So personally, I think it's better to know.
Yeah, so essentially what you're saying, Greg, is that know thyself. If you're somebody who likes to know and is willing to take actionable steps to improve it, if you get a bad number and if you can put up with that cognitive pain of knowing that you might have fewer years left than you thought, or I think that would be a good approach.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, maybe you do find that out, but it's then you pack a lot into that the 10 years or the 20 years you have remaining or whatever it is. So there's a couple of ways of reframing it towards being positive.
Right. No, that's very well said. Thank you. I'd like to ask you a question on diet that was posed by Dr. Gardner Nix, whether you think there's any relative advantage of plant-based diet versus Mediterranean, or combination Mediterranean that's plant-based?
Yeah, I think plant-based I love. And when I say plant-based, plant-forward, right? Not to say that you don't have some form of animal protein. I think we are, like, you know, again, going back to 300 years ago and back, we are omnivores. So there is a certain element of being of ingesting that protein, but I like plant based because of what it does for the planet, as well as what it does for us. So, definitely, a plant based Mediterranean diet is certainly something I would favor.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Last question we had is about cognitive aging. Do you have any thoughts on how to better age cognitively?
Yes, I think, and I don't know about what your experience was over COVID. We in New Zealand, we were locked down essentially, so we were almost like half a year where we weren't able to interact with people, and it was nice because I'm an introvert, so I was kind of happy with that. But then I found really difficult to come back out into the world, because it's actually really challenging to be socially interactive. You need to think about, you know, you're doing all sorts of things. You're thinking forward, you're listening, you're watching. These are really important things in terms of forcing the muscle that is our brain to actually be busy and active. And so so being social is important. I think actually having a purpose, having another language, having a hobby, these are all things that we can do to slow aging down. And, you know, people with hearing issues, we've learnt, actually have cognitive decline earlier than people that don't have hearing issues. And this is because your brain is monitoring, it's working the whole time, filtering out what's going on around your environment. So these are all clues that just we've just got to keep stimulating our brain and learning and reading and interacting. And that's one way of slowing brain aging down.
Mm. So what I'm hearing is that having a sense of purpose, a reason to wake up and to connect and contribute are important reasons that will drive our body into a state of better health and hopefully improve our health span and contribution and satisfaction of having lived this finite life.
Yeah, and just continue to challenge your brain.
Mm. So learning a new language or taking on a new project. That's
an instrument. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Well, there. So I think we're coming to past 6:30. I did want to offer the platform for anyone who wants to ask any other questions. A lot of thank yous to you, Greg, for coming all the way from New Zealand and joining us and enlightening us. And I wanted to thank you for the practical, actionable advice from you. And I wish success to all of you for in their endeavor to their towards their wellness journey.
Yeah, definitely. Happy, healthy aging, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you on behalf of everyone. I look forward to seeing you again and maybe meeting with you at the next conference.
Yeah, that'd be great. All right. Well, thank you so much. We'll see you around and I'll drop you the presentation by email.
Awesome. Great. Stay in touch.
Thanks so much.
Well, bye-bye.